Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to doctor, nutritionist, and best-selling author, Dr. Hazel Wallace, aka The Food Medic.
The word hysteria derives from the word uterus, which is the womb. And basically, old age thinking was that women had these mental health problems which derived from our womb. And any kind of condition that a woman experienced, whether she fainted or she had a seizure or she was either had increased or decreased sexual desire, like all of these very random symptoms that don't fit together, they would say that's hysteria. And it was in the actual manual of kind of that we used to diagnose mental health disorders and was only removed in the 1980s.
Originally from Dundalk, Hazel lives in London and has over 500,000 followers on Instagram. Her third book, The Female Factor, is a deep dive into women's health. And in this conversation, she answers questions like why we crave chocolate just before a period and what is our pelvic floor and why it's important. And I started the chat by asking her why she decided on a career in medicine.
When I was 14, I lost my father to a stroke, which was, you know, very early on in life. And at that time, I was thinking about what I wanted to do in college. And I was planning on doing business and accountancy. Well, that's what my parents, I think, wanted me to go into. But I think going through the experience of losing dad and being in the hospital and things, I was the first time I considered going into a career in medicine. But I kind of made the decision maybe when I was 16 or 17, very late into kind of prepping for my leaving cert. I didn't get the grades, unfortunately, to do it in Dublin, but I ended up doing a medical sciences bachelor's degree in Wales. So I moved to Wales when I was 18, into the Valleys, which was a big culture shock, but yeah. I loved it. And then from there, I went into graduate entry medicine after that degree. So it was about 7 years total. And it was quite, you know, intense, but it was the best decision. And I knew kind of once I qualified, it was what I was meant to do with my life.
And then when did you decide to set up the Food Medic blog? That was about 10 years ago, was it?
Yeah, it was 10 years ago, 10th anniversary this year. So I was in medical school at the time, and it was 2012. And I I guess my interest in nutrition and medicine and the interaction between food and our health also stemmed from losing dad to a stroke, which is a condition that, you know, it's, there's multiple risk factors, but one of the major ones is nutrition and physical activity and stress and things like that. And I remember the summer before dad died that he was told that he has high blood pressure and borderline diabetes and needed to kind of get himself into check in terms of exercising and diet and stuff. And I remember him taking that very seriously, but unfortunately it was all a little bit too late. And I think I was really interested in learning more about that in medical school, but we were talking about it, but more like mentioning it and paying lip service, but not really, you know, fully understanding or being given advice on how we would, I guess, deal with a patient who might be in the same scenario. And so I went off on my own and started the Food Medic blog all that time ago. And it basically just grew alongside me during medical school. And at the time, the health and wellness industry, I guess, was up and coming, but a lot of the people in it were just kind of unqualified bloggers, I guess. And so there was a big interest in what I was saying because I was trying to keep it as grounded in the science as I could and just make it really accessible for people. So I actually got my first book deal then when I was still in medical school. I was in my, doing my final exams. So I was writing the book, studying for my exams. And then I moved to London and started working as a doctor, and it's just continued ever since. So it's a big passion of mine.
When you say that, look, you know, I think anyone listening who has lost a parent at any age, but particularly at 14, I mean, that's an age in a young person's life when you're transitioning from a child to becoming an adult. You know, you're going through all of these huge physical, mental and emotional changes, and then you're dealing with the loss of your dad. I would imagine that your journey into medicine and what, like, your passion for it, your why was so strong. Was it an emotional time for you? What did it help actually going into learning more about our bodies and how they work? Did it help you kind of cope with the grief of your dad?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like I just became extremely fascinated with the human body and how it worked. I think it was something that I never thought that I could do. And I don't know, I know that, you know, when you are a teenager, there's certain students who will be almost headhunted to become doctors or dentists and things like that. And that was, although I was very diligent, wasn't really me. And so I had to be very brave and kind of believe in myself that I could do it. So I love telling my story because I know there's loads of students who are doing their Leaving Cert or A-levels and they think that, oh, they could never do medicine. And I think it really just putting your mind to it and, you know, hardworking and stuff. But also, I guess I had a reason why I wanted to do it, and it almost felt like a vocation for me. So I really wanted to kind of do it for my dad as well.
I getcha. So the female factor, Making Women's Health Count and What It Means for You, is your third book. And I know this book is doing really, really well for you. Obviously, as it says in the tin, it's all about women and our bodies and how they work. So you cover a multitude of stuff. And I know you're a huge advocate for movement is medicine. And there is a whole section in the book on movement. So you've kind of broken it down into nutrition, movement, mood, sleep, and then a whole load of gorgeous recipes as well. Something you're really known for on your Instagram page. You're a huge fan of the Mediterranean diet as well, I believe. And we've already spoken to a professor here on the podcast, Professor Roseanne Kenny, who wrote a book about aging. And she, like you, is a huge, from her studies and years of research, that the Mediterranean diet is where it's at in terms of health and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think because it's not necessarily like a dietary protocol or plan, it's very much like flexible to various different kind of dietary preferences, I guess, because it's just, you could cater it to many different diets. It's not the only diet that's well researched with health benefits, but because it's so anti-inflammatory and full of antioxidants with colorful fruits and vegetables and oily fish, etc., it really does, you know, from heart health to brain health to gut health, it comes up trumps when we're talking about kind of overall health.
Okay, so you also obviously discussed one of the most important aspects of being a woman when we hit puberty is when we get our periods, we have our menstrual cycle and it stays with us until we hit menopause. It's a huge aspect of our lives and it impacts so many different areas. So one of the questions that you address in the book, and I really do want to know the answer, is why we crave chocolate, particularly just before our period arrives.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed writing this section because I feel like for me, it gave me like a lot of understanding of my own body, I guess.
Yeah.
So basically we have in a typical 28-day textbook menstrual cycle, although no woman is a textbook. So if anyone listening thinks my cycle's not 28 days, there's nothing wrong with you. So we've got two phases. We've got a follicular phase, which is typically the first 14 days, and then ovulation, and then the luteal phase, which is the second phase up until day 28 before the next period. And typically in the luteal phase, so this is when progesterone and estrogen is high. Progesterone is actually a bit higher. You have a higher resting metabolic rate. So your metabolism is a little bit higher, which means you burn more calories at rest in the second half of your cycle. It's very difficult to figure out how many calories exactly because everyone's individual, but some studies have said, you know, up to 300 calories more. So if you're burning that much energy, naturally the body's going to be a bit more hungry because you need more energy on board. And so what we see during this time is a natural increase in food intake. So people tend to eat a bit more and women tend to report more cravings for foods, particularly those that are really energy dense, so high in carbs, high in fat. And then the kind of chocolate story is that, interestingly, when it comes to food cravings in general, women appear to crave chocolate more than men, which is funny because I feel like it's a bit more of an old wives' tale, but actually it seems to be backed by the science as well. So in that second phase, I think the narrative is often, you know, try to reject the cravings and think of something else and have a glass of water and go for a walk and distract yourself, when actually, because we're burning more energy, I think we should be leaning into those cravings and listening to the signals from our body. But instead of, you know, depending on sugar and caffeine to carry us through, it might be wise to just get in more high fiber, complex carbohydrates, like whole grains and things like that, that will give us energy, but also sustain us throughout that period. So I feel like that was a really interesting piece of research.
And you are a fan of chocolate yourself. I know this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm one of those people who probably has it daily because I think it's something that can absolutely fit into a healthy, balanced diet.
Yeah, wonderful. And like, as I said, there's so much in the book. It's really a guide from what age would you say that this could be something that could be gifted to a young woman? Would you say this is something you could give them as they're kind of entering puberty?
Yeah, I think because I wanted to write it for a woman across her entire lifespan. So really from puberty up until after the menopause.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the health advice, although there's limited for women, tends to be just women of like reproductive years or around pregnancy or postnatal. And, you know, we do many more things in our lives. And I think if I was a teenager and I was given this and I understood a bit more about my cycle, it would help me understand why my body fluctuates and things like that, and why I might crave certain things or why my mood might be a little bit different at certain times of the month. So I hope it acts as a bit of reassurance for women.
You do a brilliant section as well on the pelvic floor, something that is important for every woman, regardless of whether you have babies or not. But obviously for those of us who have children, we know all about the pressure that has been put on the pelvic floor and how important it is. And we're always told, and, you know, in the classes, pre-birth, you know, to do your pelvic floor exercises and to make sure to do them afterwards. And some women are better than others, and some of us forget to keep doing them. And I've had two babies, and I've certainly known the difference on baby number two, that it's not as strong as it was after I had my first baby. It's really important the way you break it down and explain what it is, because I think a lot of us, we hear this all the time. We're kind of going, what is the pelvic floor? Where is it? What does it do? Mm. So if you wouldn't mind just discussing that a little bit, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in that, like, we hear about it, but we don't really know where it is or what it does. And I think it's only a conversation around after you've given birth, but it's really important for everyone, not just women, to be practicing pelvic floor exercises and understanding where they are.
That's very interesting. So you say for everyone. Yes, so for men everyone. As well.
Yes, for men.
I didn't
as
know
well.
That. Why?
Yeah, because, well, I mean, we all have pelvic floors, so it's really important to kind of keep it strengthened, because one of the signs of a weak pelvic floor is urinary and bowel incontinence, and also it can affect kind of sexual satisfaction as well. So it's important for both men and women, especially as we get older. We're going to, like, those muscles are going to become weak, and if you don't work a muscle, it doesn't maintain, like, its strength, and so that's why we should really be doing it. But I think, like you said, not many people know what it is or where it is. And basically, it's just kind of, if you picture the bony pelvis, it's just a sling of muscles around your, like, intra-abdominal muscles. So things like your bladder and your womb and your rectum. And it keeps all of those things in place and helps everything open and close as it should do. But of course, if it becomes weak, things may open up when they shouldn't. So if you're, like, jumping on a trampoline and you feel like you're leaking urine, that's typically a sign that you don't have a very strong pelvic floor. But that's not the only sign. So other things, like I said, having sudden urgency to go to the toilet, or if you find that you have like a heaviness or a bulge coming down out of your vagina, or you find you're having painful sex, or even just any pelvic pain, there's lots of signs that there's something not going on there.
And what do you what do you recommend in that situation? Because that sounds like there's probably, it's like a scale, and, you know, depending on where we are on the scale, whether we have a slightly vulnerable pelvic floor or one that's really under pressure and that is weakened a lot. I mean, would you say that there is a kind of a go-to as to what you can do? I would imagine the first thing is do your exercises. Then if that doesn't work, then do you get help? Do you go to a physio?
Yeah, I would go to your GP, and either, if you can, go to a pelvic health physio, because they're particularly trained in this field. What you could do in the meantime, if you're waiting for a referral, is to kind of do your pelvic floor exercises. And if you have symptoms, you should be doing that up to 2 to 3 times a day. Because all of us, regardless if we have symptoms or not, should be doing it every day. I don't know about in Ireland, but in the UK we have, the NHS has an app called Squeezy, and it, like, helps you, kind of gives you prompts on how to do it every day.
I remember I used that. I used that when I was, when I was pregnant with my son, my first baby, I used it and I found it handy. And then I got into the habit of, every time I was driving, if I hit the traffic lights, it would send a signal to me to do my exercises just while I was there.
Oh, that's really great.
And I just got into the habit.
Yeah, it's just getting into the habit, because it's one of those things, like brushing your teeth, like try to stack it with something that you do every day, like brushing your teeth or kind of making a cup of tea in the morning. And if you kind of have times of the day that you always do it, then you're more likely to remember it.
For somebody listening who's going, but what are the exercises? I mean, they're talking about it, but I don't know what it is. And you just said it there, the app is called Squeezy, which kind of explains exactly what it is. It's about, actually, you're better at describing it than I would be.
Yeah. So the best way to kind of find where your pelvic floor is, when you're going for a wee and then you stop the flow of wee, that is essentially your pelvic floor doing the work. Now, that's not how you exercise your pelvic floor. You shouldn't use that. But how you can train your pelvic floor, you can do it whether you could do it anyway, lying, sitting, standing, it doesn't matter. And what you want to do is squeeze like you're trying to stop yourself from passing wind. And as you do this, you should feel your perineum, which is like the bit between your back passage and your vagina, kind of contract and lift upwards. And that you're doing it correctly if you can feel that. Yeah. So you should try to hold that for a few seconds, up to 10 seconds, and then let go and relax. And the important thing is when you're holding, still breathe normally. Like if you were holding a plank, you would still breathe normally. Try not to hold your breath. And then repeat this up to 10 times. So after you do those long holds, we get people to do 10 short squeezes, and that just helps to work the fast twitch muscles. So you've got slow twitch and fast twitch. So that's basically what you do in a nutshell. Do 10 long squeezes, 10 short squeezes, and try to do that every day.
And if it's really hard at the beginning, like, don't be disheartened, because as you said, it is a muscle, and the more you do it, the better it'll get, the stronger it'll get, the easier it'll get. So if it is challenging in the beginning, because I can imagine, depending on where people are at, they might do it and go, God, I can't hold on to it for 10 seconds. What's wrong with me? You know, there's nothing wrong. You'll just keep doing it and it'll get easier. I mean, I say that now, as I said, but I mean, I need to be practicing what I'm talking about myself a little more.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot of people are embarrassed, you know, to talk about, particularly when it comes to intimate parts of the body. Like, they're worried, oh, I can't say that to my GP, or I know him or her for too long. You know, there is a lot of that, isn't there, that people can feel a little bit just uncomfortable and a little overly vulnerable.
I think people still think, oh, I need to shave my legs when I go for a smear test, or you know, they will feel like they'll put off going to the doctor if it's something to do with kind of anything down there, healthcare, or anything to do with sex or whatever it might be. But honestly, that's kind of, you know, every doctor has seen it, and we've seen worse and we've heard worse, and we're all humans at the same, you know, at the same time. So it's completely normal. And if you do feel like, I don't feel absolutely comfortable, or maybe you want to speak to a female doctor, or maybe you want to bring someone with you, that's absolutely fine as well.
Yeah. Okay. In the book, you discuss heart disease, because it's been known for a kind of many years as a kind of a inherently male disease. But is that the case?
No, it's not. This was actually probably the reason I got into writing the book, because there was a lot of science emerging the last kind of couple of years about heart disease in women, and the fact that women were more likely to die after having a heart attack than a man. And wow. I thought, well, first of all, I wanted to understand why, because I, you know, have been through medical school and there was no mention of this. And basically, I'm sure if anyone can think of an advertisement on the TV when it comes to a heart attack, it will be an older man clutching his chest, falling to the floor. Mm. And so I think we just have this assumption that heart disease is a man's disease when it's absolutely not. So it's the biggest killer of women worldwide as well. Okay. As well as it is men. And actually women are twice as likely to die from heart disease than breast cancer in the UK. Wow. And
That is surprising. I like, this is, feels like this is new news. So yeah, fair play that you're actually educating us on this, because this seems like a revelation.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was really interesting learning about it. And actually, I was quite shocked by some of the statistics. And I mean, the biggest question is, well, why does this happen? Why are women more likely to die? Because it's not because they're coming into hospital and doctors are ignoring them, but it seems that there's a couple of reasons why. So from arrival time to hospital, if you kind of picture a woman at home, she first experiences symptoms. A woman is more likely to push off coming to hospital on time because she might think that it's something else. So she might think it's like a panic attack or having palpitations. She's more likely to wait at home until symptoms get worse, or she might try to self-medicate. And the other reason for coming to hospital late is there's often conflicting family responsibilities. So she might have to kind of pick up the kids from school and things like that. So there's, you know, from the first moment, there's a delay. And in hospital, in medicine, we always say time is muscle. And when you're having a heart attack, the most important thing is you need to get a hospital ASAP. So if anyone's suspecting that they're having chest pain that could be a heart attack, always call for an ambulance. And so when they do get to hospital then, there's some suggestion that they may present with different symptoms than men. So they may present with atypical symptoms. And while the research does show that women still present with chest pain more often than not, they may also come in with things like pain between the shoulder blades, nausea and vomiting, or shortness of breath. And so they may not think that that's actually a heart attack that they're experiencing. And so how they tell the doctor what they're feeling might be a little bit different. Even when it comes to the diagnosis, a woman is 1.5 times more likely to get the wrong diagnosis for a heart attack. Okay. And again, like I said, time is muscle. And so we're already causing more and more delays for this woman getting the treatment she needs. So kind of from onset to getting the treatment, there's lots of different pieces of the puzzle that seem to be stacked against women. And so it's really important that we're raising awareness, not just for women to be more aware of the fact that they can have a heart attack and what the symptoms are like, but also for us as doctors to change our, I guess, our understanding and interpretation of who a typical patient having a heart attack looks like. It can be a younger woman. And I think we need to do more research into how we can improve the outcomes for women, because it's just not acceptable that women are twice as likely to die from a heart attack.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's kind of scary, to be honest, listening to you, but also it's important to be informed and know the signs, and that there can be so many different signs. But also not to be paranoid that if you do get a pain, that you're not automatically going to think, I am having a heart attack. But there is a difference, obviously, between having a heart attack and being in cardiac arrest. And I suppose the message is as well, you know, people can survive a heart attack. It doesn't always lead to a devastating result. So, you know, timing, getting in, getting the help can mean people can live long, healthy lives afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for the book, what was your favorite part of all? Because I know you were saying that was a huge driver as to why you wrote the book, that you really wanted to discuss heart disease in women and, I mean, educate us. But what was the most enjoyable aspect of writing the book for you?
I think the chapter on mood, maybe not like enjoyable, but the most interesting, in that like I really wanted to understand kind of why women are more likely to suffer from anxiety and depression, And as someone who has experienced both, it was something that felt very close to me. And I also have treated many women who have anxiety. And so really trying to understand why men and women experience mental health so differently, why women respond to stress so differently, was really interesting. And I found it not only interesting, but also kind of infuriating, because I think, yes, women do experience anxiety, and that's a very real thing for many women. But the other thing is, we're more likely to give a woman a psychiatric diagnosis for a physical complaint than we are to give a man.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is, if a woman comes in with physical symptoms, we're more likely to kind of prescribe her anti-anxiety or meds or antidepressants. So it's kind of, there's, you know, there's wrapped up in two things there. It's not only that we're experiencing those conditions, but we may be over-diagnosing them as well. And I think that really feeds back to the age-old kind of classical conditions that women used to be diagnosed with, like hysteria, which is an absolutely fake diagnosis. And this derives from the fact that the word hysteria derives from the word uterus, which is the womb. And basically, old age thinking was that women had these mental health problems which derived from our womb. And any kind of condition that a woman experienced, whether she fainted or she had a seizure or she was either had increased or decreased sexual desire, like all of these very random symptoms that don't fit together, they would say that's hysteria. And it was in the actual manual of kind of that we used to diagnose mental health disorders, and was only removed in the 1980s, which is absolutely bonkers.
That is bonkers.
Because it was, you know, it was just, it's basically down to how we view women. Yeah. And it's nothing to do with biology. It's just gender and stereotypes. And I feel like we're still unraveling a lot of that still.
Well, that's why the work you're doing and the book you've written is really important. It has been lovely to chat to you. Unfortunately, I'm going to wrap it up now simply because we're having a little bit of breakup on the line. But the book is fabulous. It's called The Female Factor, and it's available online and in all good bookshops. Dr. Hazel Wallace, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this chat. And next week, I'll be speaking to the mesmerizing Brother Richard Hendrick. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.